We are live with episode 219 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic, and I want to talk about T-Mobile, and they are readying their plans for 5G Advanced in the United States. And this is actually a light reading article that our friend Mike Dano wrote after speaking with Wolf at T-Mobile. Now, one of the challenges is the whole definition of 5G Advanced, according to the 3GPP, is pretty vague and ambiguous.
Broad.
Yeah, very broad. And so this is how Ulf and the team at T-Mobile define it. Not surprisingly, number one, it has to involve a standalone 5G core, which T-Mobile launched in 2020. T-Mobile also defines 5G Advanced utilizing carrier aggregation. And today, T-Mobile currently aggregates four bands on the downlink and two on the uplink. And they expect to increase that downlink to five in the near future. We've talked about REDCap, reduced capacity 5G. T-Mobile includes that as part of what they're going to do with 5G Advanced. And then finally, this is something new to me. You may be aware of it. L4S, which is a technology, available on wired networks, but it's intended to reduce network latency and packet loss while maintaining high throughput, thereby improving real-time application performance. There's really not a time frame on when this is going to occur, but T-Mobile has indicated that they've begun the process of deploying 5G Advanced. And from my perspective, this is their opportunity to put their foot on the accelerator, continue to leverage what they've done with standalone to drive new value and you know, performance and flexibility within their network. And I know you caught this, my friend. What are your thoughts about all this? Is this a true definition of what we would consider 5G Advanced from your standpoint?
I think 5G Advanced is going to actually carry a lot of weight in the future.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of features that will be added in the future. And it's really interesting because if you look at all the new 5G modems that are out, they're not Release 18 modems. They're Release 17 modems with Release 18 features. I think right now the problem with Release 18 is it's not technically finished yet. So it's a little bit nebulous still. Mm. And I think once the standard is like fully released, then I think it'll be a lot easier to talk about 5G Advanced a little bit more clearly. But yeah, I have no reason to believe that they don't have a Release 18 network or they won't. They've been the fastest to deploy most new standards. And they probably have the largest standalone 5G network in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see them leveraging that to deploy Release 18. Mm. In terms of steps, I see Release 15 was a big one.
Yeah.
Release 16 was a little bit less big. 17 was a little bit also incremental. And 18 I see is a big jump. But the thing is, 18 builds on everything in the previous releases. So you have to be up to date to be able to do Release 18. And I think that's one thing to consider. And maybe some networks are going to skip. We've seen things happen where Jio, they just skipped NSA entirely and went full SA, right?
Exactly.
And I could see Jio being a Release 18 network fairly soon as well. I have no reason to question T-Mobile's aspirations here. And their definition seems pretty on point. And we are seeing a lot of use of L4S, specifically in a lot of trials and tests. The T-Mobile XR trial with Qualcomm and Ericsson that utilized L4S and network slicing. I think we're on the right path, and I think we'll probably see more Release 18 networks or Release 18-ish networks in the next year or two, especially since we're seeing a lot of Chinese operators talk about that as well.
Yeah, the L4S thing was an education point for me. Obviously, you're very aware of it. You're Mr. Technical. I'm technical too, but yeah, it was interesting to learn about that. And I think from my perspective, what T-Mobile is focused on is defining their own focus on 5G Advanced is it's straight up from my perspective. It makes a lot of sense. So it'll be interesting to see how things progress and how the actual release standard comes to fruition. But let's go to your first topic. And this is pretty big news. So late breaking news, Intel has appointed its permanent CEO. And you want to talk a little bit, like I wasn't very familiar with this particular person. I know that he was formerly on the board. You're much more knowledgeable about the new CEO, but you want to talk about how his appointment might affect the future of 5G and what Intel is doing. And by the way, at Mobile World Congress, I did sit down with Intel. I think we talked about that on a prior podcast and got an understanding of what Intel is doing with Xeon 6, that SoC, to drive not only CPUing with that, but also managing a whole host of virtualized network functionality with that. But hey, let me let you take it away there.
Yes, Lip-Bu Tan was previously on Intel's board from 2022 to 2024. So he was on the board for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And he actually resigned about 7 months ago. There wasn't a clear indication of why, but the timing was very close to when Intel's former CEO, Pat Gelsinger, was, I guess, asked to retire. I'm not really sure what the clear terminology there is, but did not finish the job. And I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen him finish the job. And Lip-Bu Tan actually left before that. So it's very interesting that Lip-Bu Tan is now the replacement for Pat Gelsinger. Mm-hmm. He's actually a little bit older than Pat.
Yeah, 65, right? Yeah, I looked at his age,
And the reason why that's relevant is actually because before Pat Gelsinger, Intel had a policy of forced retirement at 65. Mm. So it's interesting that this is beginning at 65.
Yeah.
But other than that, I would say he's the one of the few people in the industry that has the experience of turning around a semiconductor company, like he did with Cadence, but also having the ability to understand foundry and chip design, which he's very uniquely. He served at Cadence as CEO from 2009 to 2021. He was able to help that company recover its share price and its place in the market. And yeah, I just think that when you look at what's possible, I think there's very few people who have the experience and knowledge that he does. So I think he's the most qualified person for this job. And honestly, he was at the top of the list for most people, including myself and our boss, Pat.
Yeah. Pat knows him well, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that I'm more inclined to believe that he knows that Intel needs to stay the course. And if you look at where foundry and product are today, they're actually in a pretty good place. Mm. I think the biggest weakness that Intel has is on AI, specifically with AI in the data center, not so much on client. And that's actually where he has a lot of experience. He's on the board of a lot of companies and has lots of experience in AI investment as well. Mm. So I just think that he's the right person for this job. My biggest concern is like whether or not he has the time before he needs to retire.
Yeah.
Because 65 is already up there. That's considered retirement age in most places.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how long he sticks around. There's a serious revamp that needs to happen in the data center for Intel. And they might be on the right path, but it's still unclear about accelerators, and maybe they have to acquire or joint venture with some companies to make that happen. But regardless, I think that this is the right move. And I think Intel stock popped 12% on the news.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it was very clearly a vote of confidence from investors. And Intel will be having its big vision conference in Las Vegas, I believe, April 1st and 2nd. I think there will be some opportunities there to get an update from the company and hear from Lip-Bu Tan himself about the direction. He did publish a long letter to the employees talking about remaking the future of the company and how they want to be engineering focused. And it'll be really interesting to see where the company moves under his leadership. But there's definitely changes that need to be made. And I think that's quite obvious to everyone. It's just important to see how those changes are made and what direction they go in.
Yeah, I'm reading between the lines, but I did read some excerpts from that employee letter. And certainly he wants to bring Intel back into its engineering prowess. That's what Intel has been known for. And I read between the lines that I think one of the reasons why he departed the board was that he fundamentally disagreed with some of the direction on outsourcing engineering work and that sort of thing. So I feel like he's the right person for the role. He's got the pedigree. He brings the engineering background. To your point, he has a record of with Cadence and bringing him back to profitability as well. So I think it's a strong move. And to your point, after hours, the stock was up 12%. So that's a very positive indication. And then not that I put a lot of credence in what a lot of the financial analysts on Wall Street say, but in general, I think it was very well received, that the news was very well received on Wall Street. And that's important for Intel because it's been a roller coaster there. It's, they've had their ups and downs, and engineering execution has been a big issue for Intel. So it'll be interesting to see what transpires, but on the surface, this is very positive.
I will add that as of today, the market was down like 5 or 10%, depending on the company. Intel's up 15% after the additional on top of the after hours growth. So it popped a total of 15% on this news.
Excellent. Interesting. Cool. Well, we'll keep our eyes and ears peeled to all of this and see how things progress. But let's go to my second topic, and I want to talk about Broadcom. And this is an announcement that I did not catch during Mobile World Congress, but this was something I found on the Fierce Wireless Network. But Broadcom apparently announced a converged 5G fiber and satellite appliance, and it's called VeloSky. And what's interesting is that Broadcom is targeting this particular solution to help mobile network operators, communication service providers, supposedly recoup their investments in 5G and satellite. And it's targeting the enterprise needs for a converged architecture that can feed AI applications. And I read through the article, and from my perspective, I think the value in providing a single link for multiple network types could be potentially very compelling. This plays really well into Broadcom silicon strengths within networking. And so I think it's interesting. Basically, what the Fierce Network article summarizes is that given the shift with AI applications, the cloud, the whole notion of hybrid deployment, and then the notion of software-defined networks has just created additional complexities. And when you're managing multiple connectivity links, it complicates things, especially for enterprises. So this seems to me to be the Broadcom's easy button for the enterprise. And the timing is great, obviously, given AI workloads and the challenges and demands that those create on network infrastructure in general. So I don't know if you caught this, but any thoughts before we move to your next topic?
No, I think it's interesting, the converged nature of it, I think will potentially save money, but it's unclear whether or not this requires a re-architecting of the rest of the network.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably beneficial to companies that are already utilizing Broadcom infrastructure. Mm. But I think it's interesting that it's a clever name.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely interesting, especially since they talk about faster monetization of 5G.
Yeah. And that's the classic rub, right? For operators that invest billions of dollars in licensed spectrum and infrastructure for each of these generational network topologies and finding opportunities to monetize beyond just simply access is super important. And there's tremendous potential, obviously, with AI as it moves hybrid. But I think the timing's great, plays very well into Broadcom strengths. And so it'll be interesting to see how things play out here. But let's move to your second topic. And this is pretty interesting. I didn't catch it, so I'm interested to learn more from you about it. But you want to talk about Vodafone UK and Ericsson and the use of AI to actually reduce the energy consumption on 5G networks.
Yes. So this actually, I'm surprised you didn't see this because every publication wrote about it. But basically, they did a trial in the UK using Ericsson Advanced AI and ML powered software. And they were able to lower the power usage of 5G radio units by as much as 30 at select sites in London.
That's crazy.
And this was using Ericsson's advanced AI and machine learning based software solutions. Mm-hmm. The Ericsson Service Continuity AI app suite with intelligent energy efficiency dynamically adjusts the network power consumption based on demand. So
say that three times.
Right? I know. it's way too many words. But they said that they implemented three key energy saving features: 5G deep sleep, 4G cell sleep mode orchestration, and radio power efficiency heat map. And Ericsson further explained that 5G deep sleep uses AI-driven predictive algorithms to allow radios to enter an ultra-low energy hibernation state, reducing power usage by up to 70% during off-peak hours. And then that 4G cell sleep mode orchestration does a behavioral model of network cells to fine-tune sleep parameters to ensure that power savings doesn't affect performance.
Yeah.
And then Their radio power efficiency map uses ML to create a visual representation of all the network cells, identifying and ranking underperforming sites for targeted efficiency improvements. So those are like the big three things that they were able to implement, and that's how they achieved these capabilities. They used Ericsson's antenna integrated radio 5322 and baseband 6651, and they use a Snapdragon X65 modem to RF system in the devices.
Yeah. My God, like a third energy efficiency, that's huge, man.
It is. Yeah. It's operators, some of their biggest costs.
Oh, that's the number one operational expense line is your power bill. When Chris Sambar was running networks at AT&T, he told me it was like their power bill is like in the billions.
Yep.
You were just complaining before we got started on our podcast about your power bill and your double payment and San Diego. But yeah, think about the power bill that these mobile network operators have to foot. Super compelling. Hey, man, let's hit my third and final. I'm going to be really quick on this one before the cold medication wears off. But I caught this on, where was this? This was on the Fierce Electronics website. I didn't catch this, but Qualcomm recently acquired a company called Edge Impulse to accelerate its Dragon Wing IoT design win. So we've talked about Dragon Wing. We've talked about how that's Qualcomm's new brand for its infrastructure extension. What's really interesting about Edge Impulse, apparently they were already working with them. And this is typical, right? I think Qualcomm works with these really cool companies and then they figure out, wow, the IP is awesome. We ought to integrate it. But Edge Impulse already supports Dragon Wing, two processors, the QCS6490 and 5430. But what's interesting about Edge Impulse is that it provides a developer toolset that allows applications to be built for asset tracking and monitoring, manufacturing, anomaly detection, predictive maintenance, and other things, including the use of AI with computer vision, audio, and speech recognition. And this complements what obviously Qualcomm is doing, integrating NPU and XPU functionality into its ASICs. And also, I think on a prior podcast, it was probably last year, you and I talked about how Qualcomm launched its AI hub, which is designed to provide better inference performance with reduced model sizes and memory. So this is highly complementary to their overall IoT strategy. And from my perspective, Qualcomm dabbled there for a while, but man, now they're super serious. New branding, a recent acquisition, to really double down on IoT and compete with the likes of MediaTek and others in this space. So I don't know if you caught the news, but what do you think about all that?
Sorry, I had to run quickly. I think it really integrates well into Qualcomm's IoT growth strategy.
Yeah.
They've been making lots of acquisitions in the IoT space. It naturally makes sense that they would go after someone like Edge Impulse. And it seemed like our colleague Bill really thought this was a good fit for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And in general, I think the market in general kind of received it pretty positively.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. So, yeah, Qualcomm is just a machine. They continue to execute and be very laser focused on all of these adjacencies within their wheelhouse. But let's hit your third and final. And you want to talk about NTN and Viasat and Space 42 have signed an MOU. So what's that all about?
Yes.
I didn't catch that either. So
Viasat's a San Diego satellite company and Space 42 is a Emirati space company. And they've signed an MOU to try to figure out how they're going to serve the direct-to-device satellite connectivity market and implement 5G NTN as a technology and have the two companies work together, because Viasat's already partnered with the European Space Agency to also work with NTN direct-to-device systems. So there's a lot of synergy here for Viasat. They're a big satellite provider.
They provide like the connectivity services on American Airlines, I know, because I've been living on an airplane the last 6 weeks.
So they're working together to deploy these technologies. Space 42 is a startup in the space tech space, and they are working hard to make these partnerships work together. Mm. But yeah, it's really cool and it's interesting to see more competition coming. I was wondering when Viasat was going to enter this space, but they've already announced some partnerships with the European Space Agency as well. Yeah, that's it. That's the quick of it.
Yeah. And boy, this is the whole notion of it's just going to continue to heat up. I think you're going to continue to see more entrants. And I think I mentioned this on our last podcast when Abel Avillian and I met sort of towards the end of Mobile World Congress, but, and I'll be publishing a Forbes article, by the way, that sort of captures my highlights and insights from the show. And I'm hoping I get that posted by the end of this week or very early next week. But one of the things that I go into a lot of detail about are the edges cases that are beyond what's considered the standard fare for low Earth orbit satellite, which is terrestrial network gap coverage. And so, and one of the things that Abel and I talked about was the ability to improve the whole broadband connectivity experience on aircraft, because it's shit today, right? I saw our illustrious leader, Patrick Moorhead, sharing something about a terrible experience he had on a flight. I don't know if it was American or Delta. And I popped for the internet on my way back from Barcelona. It was less than ideal. We don't want people doing video calls on airplanes, obviously, but there's a tremendous opportunity to improve that overall experience and just a host of other use cases. I'm going to say it one more time. I've said it a million times on this podcast over the last nearly 5 years. Innovation, competition breeds innovation, and it's a good thing, I think, for the industry. So, but my friend, it was another great podcast. I got through it without coughing once. I think I'm over the hump here. I'm over the Spanish flu that I caught in Barcelona last week, but why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights for a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at WillTownTech and I'm at Anshel Sog. We hope you have a great weekend and please tune again next week.
And rate and subscribe.
And yeah, don't forget to rate and subscribe.